We have been in all the dark corners in medieval pictures, through all the visual and literary representations of history, and in all the times it was never mentioned, we were there, somewhere. We were the forbidden people, the crazed ones, the joyous sensualists, the gay people.
If I had to survive Thea, what a glorious world I lived in. I live in this world of love and community and joy.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Australia's postal marriage plebiscite prompts hate and privacy protections. U.S. trans military ban opponents beaten by red Senate head. And parting words of wisdom from two octogenarian lesbian warriors. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michelle Yater.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending September 16th, 2017. Australia's Parliament passed emergency legislation this week, amending laws against hate speech to specifically include the Marriage Equality Postal Plebiscite Campaign. It addresses fears, expressed even before the government decided to hold the mail-in vote, of the distribution of ugly homophobic materials, verbal abuse, and threats of violence against the queer community, especially its most vulnerable young people. Mail-in ballots in the non-binding, non-compulsory national vote went out late this week. They must be returned by November 7th. The result is expected to be announced on November 15th. If Aussie voters say yes to equality, a bill to open civil marriage to same-gender couples will presumably be introduced in Parliament. Some in the government predict that gay and lesbian couples could be walking down the aisle before the end of the year. The specific marriage plebiscite hate speech law amendment remains in effect until voting ends. Anyone found guilty during the campaign of intimidation or threats of harm based on a person's sexual orientation or gender identity, or based on a person's religious convictions, can be fined up to $12,500 Australian dollars and be slapped with a court injunction to prevent further violations.
Social media was on fire this week over suggestions that shining a light under the postage paid reply envelope included with the mail-in ballot would reveal if the sender marked the yes or no box on the form inside. One Facebook user wrote, "So any postal worker with a vendetta against the opposing side can go through and remove votes as they see fit. Bravo, government." A spokesperson for Matthias Cormann, acting Special Minister of State, said Australia Post had undertaken a thorough review ahead of the survey and would have additional security measures in place during the process to maintain the integrity of the mail network. But she was short on specifics.
The Guardian newspaper reported this week that the no forces have spent five times as much as the yes forces to promote their side. But Lyle Shelton of the Coalition for Marriage told reporters at the National Press Club that his no campaigners were fighting a David and Goliath battle, casting themselves as David. They continue to appeal for more donations from the faithful to keep their generally misleading TV ads on the air. Asked which campaign had more cash at that same National Press Club gathering, Australian Marriage Equality co-chair Janine Middleton said that, "I know that our opponents try to paint us as Goliath, but it is a bit more loaves and fishes if you want to stick to Bible stories."
Meanwhile, a new Fairfax Media Ipsos poll conducted last week suggests that some 65% of those surveyed are certain to complete the postal survey, and that 7 out of 10 respondents will mark yes in favor of marriage equality. The survey has a 2.6% margin of error. It found expected participation was roughly equal across age groups. 64% of 18 to 24-year-olds described themselves certain to vote, as did 68% of those over 55. Ipsos pollster Jessica Elgood told The Age newspaper that she was surprised by that result. "Generally, when you've got non-compulsory voting, you see the older cohort turning out to vote," she said. "What's quite unusual here is we've got equally high likely turnout amongst the younger vote, which personally I think speaks to the salience of the issue for young people."
Elsewhere, the Republican leadership in the U.S. Senate blocked a bipartisan amendment to the annual defense spending bill this week that would have stopped the implementation of President Trump's ban on military service by transgender people. The amendment, co-sponsored by Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York and Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine, would have barred the Pentagon from forcibly discharging qualified service members from the armed forces based solely on their gender identity. It also would have declared a sense of Congress that individuals should be able to serve regardless of their gender identity. Several equality activists charged that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky killed the proposal because he knew it would win bipartisan support if it reached the floor of his chamber, thus undermining his Republican president. But Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman John McCain of Arizona, who's increasingly become a thorn in Trump's side, is now backing a standalone bill to block the trans service ban. When less than 1% of Americans are volunteering to join the military, he said in a statement late this week, we should welcome all those who are willing and able to serve our country. Meanwhile, new guidance issued on September 15th by the Pentagon makes it clear that currently serving transgender troops can re-enlist if they want to during the next few months while the Defense Department grapples with Trump's proposed trans ban.
Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government has withdrawn a visiting fellowship offer it extended earlier this week to transgender activist Chelsea Manning after CIA Director Mike Pompeo and others lodged strenuous complaints. Manning would have been one of about 10 visiting fellows during the upcoming school term, joining, among others, former Trump administration officials Sean Spicer and Corey Lewandowski. Visiting fellows hold formal and informal meetings with students and give talks at the school. The designation is not intended to honor or endorse the recipient, Kennedy School Dean Douglas W. Elmendorf noted in a September 15th media statement, but he said many people perceived it that way. CIA Director Mike Pompeo, who has a law degree from Harvard, was among some high-profile critics to denounce the move and canceled plans to speak this week at the Kennedy School over the issue. Harvard's actions implicitly tell its students that you too can be a fellow at Harvard and a felon under United States law, he said, adding that it was shameful for Harvard to place its stamp of approval upon her treasonous actions. Manning, as a U.S. Army private and intelligence specialist, shared embarrassing files and videos with WikiLeaks that exposed malfeasance by the Army forces during the Iraq War. She transitioned during her incarceration and was the longest-serving whistleblower in American history, spending more than 7 years of a 35-year sentence in the military brig before President Barack Obama commuted her sentence near the end of his term. She was released in May. Manning reacted with grace to the situation, tweeting that she was honored to be the first disinvited trans woman as a visiting Harvard fellow, but was also sharply critical, charging that this is what a military police intel state looks like when the CIA determines what is and is not taught at Harvard.
In other news, the United Nations' first independent expert on sexual orientation and gender identity reluctantly resigned this week. Thai Emeritus Professor Wee Tit Montapon cited health and family reasons for the decision. He was controversially appointed to the first-ever position by the UN Human Rights Council last September to investigate and protect against violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. He'll step down on October 31st. It has been a great pleasure to serve the global community on this issue for the past year, he wrote in his resignation letter. I have been unwell for the past few months and have also been hospitalized. In addition, a key member of my family household is ill, and I am now having to undertake additional family obligations, which consume both time and energy. During his time on the job, Muntapon visited several countries to meet with government leaders, activists, and organizations. He submitted reports to both the UN's Human Rights Council and General Assembly, and was the keynote speaker at the World Conference in Bangkok last November of the global queer rights group ILGA. It's unclear at the moment if a successor will be named. The creation of the post and Muntapon's appointment were each challenged by several Middle East and African nations.
And finally, teenager Eddie Blewett, who has two mums, made an emotional plea to Australians this week not to ignore the postal ballots on marriage equality now being sent out by the Australian Bureau of Statistics. The 14-year-old traveled to Canberra with his mothers, Claire and Neroli, to voice his concerns. Speaking to a crowd of reporters outside Parliament House and flanked by opposition Labour Party leader Bill Shorten and several other supportive MPs, the teen condemned the abusive language being used against his family by the No campaign.
People who know my family know that there's nothing wrong with us. We play soccer in the winter and we volunteer for the surf club in the summer. I have two parents. They love me and they love each other. All couples and all families deserve the same respect and value. People are saying stuff about my family. They're saying that they're not normal. They're saying that they're second rate. Don't listen. Be yourself. Vote yes.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 16th, 2017. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
Raise your voice so high, like it's a piece of the sky. Let it rain down around you, let it rain. Raise your voice so high, like it's a piece of the sky. Let it rain down around us all.
50 years ago, I said, and often, I said, I don't want to be identified with those queens. And then Stonewall happened, and they overturned a couple of police cars and changed my life.
She overturned a couple of laws and changed a lot of people's lives. Two iconic voices have gone silent this month. We'll hear more from U.S. Supreme Court marriage equality plaintiff Edie Windsor later in the program. But first, we remember lesbian feminist theorist and author Kate Millett. Millett's 1970 book Sexual Politics provided a groundbreaking analysis of the oppression of women under patriarchy and the use of sexuality to control society. She died on September 6th, just days before her 83rd birthday. Here are excerpts from Millett's keynote address before the Gay Academic Union Conference in June of 1978, recorded by Helene Rosenbluth for Pacifica Radio.
If you look back, we are a people, and that goes a long, long way back. We have been hidden, persecuted. We have committed a crime too dastardly or beastly to even speak its name. And therefore, when it's bad, when it's described in laws and codes and so forth, they don't even describe it. I thought it would be interesting if we described it a bit, you know? Now, heaped under the general, you know, sort of pile of sodomy is not only bestiality, but all forms of anal and oral intercourse, also practiced by the straight people very quietly, laws against that. And when you think about it, isn't it fascinating that they have done all these bizarre things, like burn us to death, make laws against us, and the main thing is, you see, that you can't ever mention what they're talking about. That it's always about something else. How we are changing this, how we are demystifying, not at the abstract level where we usually talk about new scholarship or theory or something, but as it were, the facts of life, the sweetness of the flesh. I would like to remind people who get too abstract, you must always concentrate on the sweetness of the flesh. This is one of the reasons we're here, you know? I would think a very major one, in fact. If you look beyond, say, just organized movement, we have a much longer history even than that. We have been in all the dark corners in medieval pictures, somewhere in those Hollywood movies they made about Spartacus, through all the visual and literary representations of history, and in all the times it was never mentioned, we were there, somewhere. We were the forbidden people, the crazed ones, the joyous sensualists, the gay people. How nice of the French to call us the gay people, even though it hasn't always been so gay. We were always the dissenters, the hidden subversives. We were the faggots who burned with witches, and that is where the term comes from being laid out as Attila used to often do with his victims too, but here by the church. human bodies put under the human body of the witch, and these like logs, these terrible subversives were the only people wonderful, terrifying enough, bad enough, evil enough, mysterious enough, threatening enough to be burned with the witch herself. There are millions of people who died in these ways, millions of people who underwent torture. We are a long, really suffering file of humanity for all our happy sinning. We are the eyes that stare out still and watch through the flames. Think of those eyes sometimes. Think of what it must have been like to burn to death. What a dreadful way to die. What to see the people watching you, the people who stone you. Remember that underneath what we call oppression was even the horrors of execution, the horrors of torture, the most terrible crimes that human beings can commit against each other because it is said this person made love to another person. Think of how crazy that is. We are the subversives in patriarchy all along. We have always been the ones who bring change. And are they ever afraid of it? And I thought about it. Gee, drag way back then, you know? Drag is very subversive. I could see its tremendous importance because, you see, all the ways that people are kept in these crazy categories of masculine and feminine on which the system runs and works, the roles, the status, all the rest of it, what if you erase this stuff? And what if you say, okay, you know, biological gender, the way your body looks, the way this person's body looks, and so forth, doesn't mean anything at all in the realm of temperament, psychology, or social standing. But what if you just even say, and you know what, all these costumes you make up, and if you see them as costumes, just as gesture, everything is gesture, make the wrong gesture, you know, Nance your way through life, you know, you may get a brickbat. How mad they are with imposing that behavior. That's how they keep you in line. Now, what if you went around in dresses? What if you... I think this will have to become a greater practice. The Chinese have been walking around for dresses for years. Japanese women have been wearing this little mompe that they wear to pick the rice in for ages and ages. The absurdity, the metaphysic absurdity of clothing, which is after all only artifact and aesthetic expression anyway, you see. Aestheticize everything, it becomes obvious that it has no moral value. And why should it have a political one, you know? And as interesting, when you're a little kid, you know, and you can be the other sex in your mind anytime you want to be Tom Sawyer, of course you are. When there is that freedom, the freedom that's represented, say, in As You Like, where Katharine Hepburn puts on her tights and plays, you know, Rosalind in the Forest of Arden, this sort of amazing freedom to transcend all these categories, which are made so ironclad and also so oppressive, but even just so severe, so wall-like, so brick wall-like in our lives. Orlando is another example of that for me. How to transcend all these things at the same time illustrating their absurdity and their complete arbitrariness in the way, in fact, in which we want to live, and their, well, silly, but cruel and stupid too, way in which they have controlled our sensibility, our activity, our association, all of our lives, no matter how we think we have transcended them. We grew up with all this.
Lesbian feminist author and activist Kate Millett, speaking here to the Gay Academic Union in 1978, died on September 6th.
I stand out in the morning sun, and I can feel the warmth of springtime return. Well, I thank my angels for another run, where I can touch the earth and taste the green. Cause it's a mystery to me, and it's a mystery to others I can see. and it's a reflection of our bodies, of our souls, of our hearts, of our hearts. Raise your voice so high, like it's a piece of the sky. Let it rain down around you, let it rain. Raise your voice so high, like it's a piece of the sky. Let it rain down around us all.
All you guys now know that the Supreme Court has announced its decision in Windsor versus the United States. And we won everything we asked and hoped for. Wow.
Plaintiff Edie Windsor, whose inheritance tax lawsuit put the first major crack in the Defense of Marriage Act on June 26, 2013.
I'm honored and humbled and overjoyed to be here today to represent not only the thousands of Americans whose lives have been adversely impacted by the Defense of Marriage Act, but those whose hopes and dreams have been constricted by the same discriminatory law. Children born today will grow up in a world without DOMA. And those same children who happen to be gay will be free to love and get married, as Thea and I did, but with the same federal benefits, protections, and dignity as everyone else. If I had to survive Thea, what a glorious way to do it. And she would be so pleased.
Edie Windsor's courage and tenacity made the worldwide LGBT community proud. After winning her case and even living to love and marry again, the 88-year-old defender of marriage equality died on September 12th. Exactly 1 year after her Supreme Court victory, Windsor was honored with a Logo Trailblazers Award. Here's some of what she had to say.
50 years ago, I said, I don't want to be identified with those queens. Okay. And then Stonewall happened, and they overturned a couple of police cars and changed my life, okay? And it was the beginning of my sense of community. And then, okay, some of you are too young to know, there was a long period when there were gay men's events and lesbians events. Fewer lesbians events, by the way. But never the twain met. Some of us had friends on the other side of the wall, but not a lot. And certainly not most of our social lives. And when the AIDS crisis happened, in the middle of the pain and the illness, okay, and the terror, okay, the lesbians came pouring in to act as caregivers, to carry out the garbage, to buy the groceries, to do the laundry, okay. It was just incredible. The result was, okay, of course, the disease went on. We had a great deal to deal with. Guys like Larry Kramer were fighting till we got drugs. All of that happened terribly. But the glorious thing that happened was that wall between us came down, and we saw each other for the first time. And when we saw each other, we loved what we saw. And our self-esteem began to grow. And with that came, we began to come out. And more of us came out. And some of us were forced out during the plague. Okay. But our community was growing and spreading. And for me, life was filling up. And then when the DOMA cases started pouring into the courts, people came out in droves, and the more of us came out, the more came out. So it was safer and better and wider spread. And again, I kept looking and seeing my community, and being in love, truly. And then when our case was affirmed in every way, people began not just to marry, okay. It wasn't just us, okay, that gained the self-esteem, but a lot of the straight world, as you all know, the percentages of approved of us changed, okay, and it changed because they saw us and understood it was their kids and their sisters and their brothers and their, on and on, okay, and they saw us and they saw that we didn't have horns, okay. Okay, and we really weren't out to destroy society. Okay, I mean, they saw us as people who lived and loved as they did, whose kids played with their kids and went to school with their kids. And so the world began to get better. Now, we all know, my feeling is, for me, if I had to survive Thea, what a glorious world I lived in. I live in this world of love and community and joy, and I thank everyone in this room for it. I really do. And I just want to add, we are not done by a long shot. I think of the people in this room as kind of the mainstream gays now. Okay. But there are tons of gays who are hidden still, who have no money, okay, who have none of the things that we have. Okay. And we have to be responsible for them. And we have to help make everything possible for them. Okay. And I just want to add, the trans people are just beginning to make a lot of progress, but there's a ton left to do. A ton. And lastly, the kids who are living in the street, because they had the same courage we had to come out, and their parents threw them out with that thing. There are, I forget, it's something like close to 2 million kids in this country who are gay on the street. And God knows that we have to be responsible for that. To the extent that the government will not take over, we must, okay, and do it. So I thank you all for this great world I live in. That's all I have to say.
Raise your voice so high, like it's a piece of the sky. Let it rain down around you. Let it rain down around us all. Let it rain down around us all. Let it rain down around us all. Ooh. Ooh.
That was DOMA hero Edie Windsor speaking at the 2014 Logo Trailblazers Award. Windsor died on September 12th. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week's program material came from Michelle Yater and Michael LeBeau, produced by Steve Pride, and from the Pacifica Radio Archives and producer Helene Rosenbluth. Trep Fury performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener donors, for making this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucy Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2HOT Cobar, New South Wales, WRNC Ashland, Wisconsin, KKRP Callington, Oklahoma, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.